Hello and welcome to another episode of The Inter Show. Anthony, how are you?
Good, Andrew. How are you?
Good, thanks. Well, we're still in it. I don't know whether it's a miracle or I don't know how to describe it, but we're going to Lazio with an opportunity to still get into the Champions League. What did you think of the weekend, Anthony?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not a miracle. It's definitely just Inter at its very, very best, may I add. So I think, like a lot of the Inter fans, I was left completely defeated after the Sassuolo match. Not as enraged or furious as the Juventus match, but more of a feeling of, well, it's finally happened. We've finally shot ourselves in the foot so many times this season that I'm not going to pinpoint it on this result against Sassuolo. This is a cumulative effort of failure over the season that has seen us fall short. But then La Grande Walter Zenger strikes again to deliver us the most crucial point for both his Crotone team and our hopes of Champions League for the season. So I agree with you, Andrew. I still can't believe that we are still in it, and onwards and upwards to Lazio this week. What do you think, mate?
I don't know whether to term it as a season of failure, because I was looking back over the last 10 seasons, and with the points total that we have at the moment, we'd already in 8 of the last 10 seasons we'd already be in the Champions League. I think it's a season where it looked. Because we've been poor for long periods of the season, it looks like it's a poorish season. But I think in actual fact, you've got four teams that five teams rather that have achieved really significant points totals for the positions that they're in at this stage of the season. Obviously, Juventus and Napoli, Roma, Lazio, and Inter. The performance, though, it really gutted me. It was awful. It was like as if they just hadn't prepared for the match. And when you see the players come out with the children in their arms before a match, before a crucial match, it doesn't look good. I really think it looks very, very amateur, because you're asking. At the end of the day, you're asking human beings to go from being fathers one second, and you know the weight of responsibility that that has, to then going into work the next second. And I don't know how you can prepare properly in that situation. I also don't think it looks good when you've got some of the players that have children with them that were in the role of mascots on Saturday evening, and then you have other players that don't have, because obviously you know that not all the players will have children. I don't think it creates the right atmosphere at all. I don't know. What did you think of that?
No, I completely agree. I don't know any organization in the world who holds bring your kid to work day the day that the final reports are due or the day that the presentations are due in front of the boss. I was completely against it from the start when I saw it. And it was a reflection of our mentality that day. Everyone in the squad, bar Rafinha, just didn't really look like they were up for the challenge. Not even the challenge. They weren't up for the opportunity. I should correct myself. They weren't up for the opportunity in order to make that final day a possibility. We need to keep looking at this and realize we were dealt a massive favor by Zenga and Crotone. It was already done in my head when we went down to Sassuolo. And now that we actually look towards this fixture against Lazio, I'm still in disbelief that we do have a chance. With regards to what you said about analyzing parts of our season being poor in large patches, I agree. And that makes me think what I said earlier. Perhaps this season hasn't been a failure. Because that's a great point you've made about the points totals, especially. I just think this season is once again a massive reflection of our poor mentality. And there was no bigger showing of this than midway through the season in December. Because I have to tell you honestly, Andrew, I cursed and was angrier at the results in December than I was leading into the back end of the chase here. I was a lot angrier at the final second goals conceded via Crotone, Spal and Fiorentina than I was to the 1-0 loss, say, to Torino leading up to the run-in, because I knew that this is exactly the kind of mental fatigue, exactly the kind of downfall mid-season that is going to plague us at the end of this season. You see, in one hand, I see a season that was gifted with so much opportunity that we really should have had a Champions League sewed up before the final two or three match days. At the start of the season, we were playing fantastic football, and I must admit, I was even guilty of thinking that when we were really flirting with that top spot, I thought, we're really going for it this season, and I don't think we'll struggle to get that Champions League spot. I think we've made it a permanent goal. But as the season went on, we started to show form that not only invalidated that comment, but it started to bring forth the complete other idea of the concept. Do we deserve to be in the Champions League? We have shown time and time again that mentally we're just not up for the challenge. And despite the good run of form at the start of the season, it's all well and good when you're jolly and the results are going your way. But the mark of a champion team, and more specifically in this case, a Champions League elite level team, is when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and they find a way to keep going and going and going. And I guess it really is Pazza Inter, typical Inter style, that we are going to showcase all these factors on the last day of the season in Rome in a do or die fixture.
Yeah, I think I would disagree slightly with you in terms of the performance on Saturday. I thought that Brozovic put in a good shift. He put it, you know, some of the passes were excellent, and the commentators on the TV channel I was watching it with on actually asked, you know, what does Brozovic is going to be thinking, what do I actually have to do to get these players moving? That said, the rest of the performance was abysmal. The wall that was set up for the first goal, for the free kick from Sassuolo, was ridiculous, you know. And I think although I will get criticised in some quarters for having a go at Handanovic again, he's the most non-communicative goalkeeper I've ever seen, who is considered in some quarters to be one of the leading goalkeepers in Italy, in Europe, arguably even the world. It's beyond me how a goalkeeper cannot demand that his wall is set and tell his wall exactly what he expects from them. And then if the wall doesn't do what he tells them to do, and he's forced into a save or he concedes a goal, he should be out there like hell's fury in terms of really hammering it home to those players that cannot ever happen again. But he just doesn't communicate. I've never seen him barking orders as I would expect a goalkeeper to do at his defenders and the rest of his teammates. I don't know what you thought of that.
I agree with you once again. The communication wasn't there. And when you look at some of the other keepers and you see not only how much they dictate the communication, but the look in their eyes, the fury in their eyes of, you know, you do this, you go there. I guess there's no other better example than Buffon. He looks like a man possessed whenever the opposition gets anywhere near a sniff of the Juve 18-yard box. And, you know, that's what pretty much has made him the greatest of all time. Let's not compare the two. But I agree 100%. Handanovic needed to be more vocal there. He needed to be more direct. He needed to show leadership qualities when it mattered the most, and it did it, and he didn't, but he was not the only one, Andrew. Mauro did not show any leadership qualities once again. Many of the players who have been there for a while did not show qualities of a team that is ready to step up mentally when it matters most. And I hate throwing this word around there, but it has been used a lot over the years and it's being used a lot again now. And the word is cowards. And I guess that some of these players, because they are inexperienced and they haven't been able to elevate themselves to that level of the Champions League, it's almost as though they haven't performance anxiety to get to that next level, because it is the abyss. It is the unknown. And those were personally my thoughts of the collective effort against Sassuolo. It just seemed like a massive mental, psychological breakdown of men who were not ready to go to that next level. What were your thoughts on that?
I would agree with you. As crazy as it probably sounds, Part of me wonders whether these players, or a lot of these players, actually have a fear of playing in the Champions League. And I'm not convinced that all of them actually want to put themselves on show on the biggest stage in the world, which is crazy. But I don't know whether some of them feel that they are limited players, and that they would be exposed in against the Messis, against the Ronaldos, against the Agüeros of this world. It doesn't ring true, but it's something that just watching them, I've become more and more convinced that there is something missing there. But then I go back to the thing of them walking out with the children before the match starts. I think that shows that there is an amateurness right at the heart of the club, right at the top levels of the club. Because I don't know, as you said, I don't know any business anywhere in the world, any successful business certainly, that would allow that. Fair enough if they'd achieved the Champions League
Exactly.
by winning. I'm not a fan, I have to say. I'm not a fan of, bringing out the wives, the girlfriends, the children under any circumstances, because I think in some ways it's disrespectful to the fans, in the sense that the fans are actually, in terms of the job that the players are supposed to be doing, the fans are with the players probably more often. When they're out on that pitch, then their families are. Obviously, family is important. I have a family, you have a family, we all cherish our families. But there's a certain tokenism about it, I think, that just doesn't sit well with me. However, having said that, it's the way of the modern world. And if they want to bring out their wives, girlfriends, children, had they achieved the Champions League place by beating Sassuolo, for example, and they'd achieved what was the season's aim, then do it. Do it after the match. Because the other thing about it as well is it's deeply disrespectful, or it comes across as deeply disrespectful. And I know Iachini, the Sassuolo manager, referenced this on Rai. That kind of thing comes across as disrespectful to the team that you're playing, as if, okay, look, all we have to do is roll up here and we win, and that doesn't happen in any of the top leagues in the world. You cannot expect to roll up against a team and beat them. It just doesn't work like that. In terms of Icardi's leadership, I don't think a centre forward is your best player to be the captain. He's often too far removed from the rest of the team. Like the goalkeeper is too far removed from the attacking players. The centre forward is too far removed from the defenders. And I don't know how they do it, but I would seriously look at Skriniar as the captain for next season onwards.
Next season, in terms of the captainship of our side, I'm not too sure the direction that it's going to head in. I'm a big fan of Mauro. I'm a big fan of his passion. I truly do believe that he loves this club and he wants to stay at this club as long as possible. But what you said just then was perfect. He is way too far removed from the rest of play, even more so than most centre forwards of the world. He does like to flirt further up in attack than, say, the Ciro Immobile, Mohamed Salah type, who will drop back and start assisting earlier on in in the opposition's half. So that I agree with. And if we were looking towards next season, I would be all for giving it to someone like Skriniar. Or once again, I would be all for giving it to someone like Rafinha. But that's a whole other conversation about whether or not we are going to redeem him, which I think needs to be the top priority. Andrew, I wanted to know your thoughts, your real thoughts on Mauro Icardi and where you stand on the possible sale of him at the end of the season if we do not qualify for the Champions League. It's been something that's been thrown around for a while now. Piero Zilio came out this week and said, regardless of this objective, he will remain. But if we were to miss out on this prestige objective, are the club's hands tied and do we need to make a very, very important decision regarding Mauro Icardi at the end of the season?
Again, I'm going to say something controversial in that I think that for the good of the club, Icardi is a player that needs to be sold for a few different reasons. Absolutely fantastic goal scorer, and we wouldn't be where we are without his goals. To me, though, he's too much of the centre-forwards that I remember in the 80s, maybe the early 90s. I would equate him with the likes of Ian Rush and Gary Lineker, that were, you knew that in that 18-yard box, if they got on the ball, there was a very, very, very solid chance of scoring a goal. If you look at centre-forwards these days, and probably because the sport has become so much quicker, the top centre-forwards have more to their game than simply goal-scoring. I'm not criticising Icardi because, as I said, his goals have been vital. He's also the only player, realistically, that we can sell and make huge money from. And that money could be fundamental in refinancing or financing the rebuilding of the team. Something came out in January of potentially Real Madrid looking at Icardi, but looking at buying him through a Benzema plus cash deal. To me now, that would make perfect sense because you would have a player who is approaching sort of the twilight years of his career. And that would give time to Lautaro Martinez, who's already coming in, to the weight of responsibility would be less on Martinez's shoulders if there was someone like Benzema there. I can't pinpoint where I've heard it, but I have heard something about Paris Saint-Germain and similarly Cavani plus cash. Again, another player in the twilight years of his career or approaching the twilight years of his career. And I think that would be a solid project to ease Martinez in. That's my thoughts on it. Do you think that we have to keep Icardi or how do you think it should go?
Well, I just want to say I think it's controversial too, but he has been my favourite player since the minute he joined our club. He's the exact same age as me. I just feel as though every time I watch him, he is everything I wanted myself to be on the football field and more. That being said, though, the idea of selling him, it was a very fearful concept for me at the start of the season and even as the season went by, and he was our only glimmer of hope when he just kept scoring and scoring and scoring. But now as the final weeks have approached us and, you know, you start to swap that emotional train of thought for a more rational, logical train of thought, you start to think of the options that you have. And I just echo the thoughts that you said before. When you actually look at our squad and where it really needs repairing the most, we can actually benefit a lot from this Icardi sale and how much he's worth. Because let's be honest, when you analyze our squad on a man-by-man basis, nobody in our team is going to raise a fraction of that money. This man is worth 100 million euro bare minimum. That's the minimum that Real Madrid will put down for him if it is just cash. In terms of a player exchange, I'd take both of the players you just said. I have not heard anything at all about the PSG Cavani rumors, but I would snap Cavani off with one bite, 100%. I think he has been their best player this season, and I think Neymar gets all the glory for in the Liga in this season. He was named Player of the Year despite being injured for a third of the season. I think Edison Cavani was fantastic this season. He's also quite a humble player. He doesn't ask for much. He broke the PSG leading goal scoring record. And I think for the amount of admiration that he Neymar has gotten this season as opposed to Cavani, if I was Edison Cavani, I'd be ready to hand in my transfer request tomorrow because I think he has received nowhere near the recognition he deserves this season. And I think he would be a great player for Inter. Just echoing what you said before on Martinez, having a player of South American stature like Edison Cavani there, leading you in to the responsibility, it would take a mammoth amount of weight off Lautaro Martinez, who I am very, very excited to see play for our club. I've been for this purchase for a long time. And after seeing how many goals he's been able to score for Racing, when you look at his price tag, it's actually quite hard to find a goal scorer or a player of his pedigree for anywhere near that 25 to 27.5 million price. I think we've got a great deal with this guy here, and I can't wait to see how he performs. Of course, it's up to our club to nurture him in the proper way, but I actually think we've got a diamond on our hands here, and it's all about how our club chooses to play it in terms of how successful he can be. So to go back to the original question, after seeing our squad and where it needs reinforcing and where it needs investing, I think the sale of Icardi could actually be very, very beneficial in the long run, or actually in the not too distant future as well.
Yeah, my only thing with Martinez is that coming from the Argentinian league, which, with no disrespect to the Argentinian league, it is a couple of levels below the top leagues in Europe. I haven't been able to see him because his anytime I've looked over the last couple of months, Racing have been playing sort of midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning our time. So just haven't been able to see him. The only thing I would say is that it's very likely that he's going to be taken to the World Cup, and if somebody like Sampaoli is that convinced by him that he feels that he would add something alongside the heavyweights of the likes of Messi and Aguero, then this kid must really have something going for him. Francis asked, sent in a question, said, if Martinez comes, does it mean Icardi leaves? I think the pro club is probably looking at that option. There has been some talk of them playing together and Inter going with a two-man attack next season, which is a couple of Francis's other questions. Can they play together? And if yes, does it mean a change in formation? I'm not convinced that they can play together because I think Icardi strikes me as somebody who operates in that role as a sort of as a lone ranger. I don't know. Do you think that they could fit together?
Look, I think they could fit together. The only thing that's leaving me questionable is the same as you. I haven't seen enough evidence to suggest that they could work together because Icardi really has worked well as that solo man in the middle with a left winger and a right winger feeding him, and of course with a player behind him feeding him as well. Whether they can play front up in a two or in a 1-1 as with Lautaro as a second striker, I'm honestly not too sure. I couldn't tell you. I don't think there is anywhere near enough evidence to suggest either for or against. I would be all for the concept if that's what you're asking. I would love to be able to grab Martinez and keep Icardi, providing we qualify for the Champions League. But as you said before, if push comes to shove and we are faced with a very real pessimistic situation by the end of this week, I would still be more for the selling of Icardi and the nurturing properly of Lautaro Martinez at Inter, because we know he's coming now. We have heard from more than enough media outlets, from Auxilio and from Racing's, from Martinez's agent himself. He is coming. He's on the way. He's almost here. So we may as well do it properly.
Yeah, another of Francis's questions was, does it make it less relevant to keep Rafinha? I would argue that it probably makes it more relevant to keep Rafinha because you need that creative person behind your centre forwards. We ran a poll on Twitter and on who people wanted us to talk about in regards to transfers. 45% said they want us to talk about Lautaro Martinez, and just behind with 39%, Stefan De Vrij. Javik sent in a question, there are rumours that De Vrij may face a suspension over doping allegations. Is this true? To my knowledge, and I read this in Gazzetta, I think I searched for it and I saw his question, that the problem with De Vrij's doping allegation was actually a technicality. There was a drug test done on De Vrij, as is done on every player at various points during the season. There's nothing suspicious about that whatsoever. That's normal practice. And at the end of the match, he wasn't able to provide enough urine to make up the quantity needed for the drug test. So he had to wait and then provided more, and that those two amounts amounted to the required volume, and it was just a technicality rather than actual allegations. I mean, I stand to be corrected on that, but that was my understanding of it. I don't know. Do you know anything about that, Anthony?
No, I pretty much know just as much as you did, and you said it quite well there. Once again, just a technicality. I've found more than ever these days not to buy into the media hype too much until you see anything officially confirmed. So to me, this was all just speculation. Anyway, staying on the De Vrij topic, though, I am fairly convinced, and I stand corrected on this as well, that Simeone Inzaghi will not be starting him over the weekend. I, for one, agree with this decision on all parties because there is just way too much involved. I was very much against the decision to announce the signing of De Vrij in the last week, or it wasn't even officially announced, really. Ozilio slipped it into conversation when he was asked about Icardi's renewal, and he said, regardless of the Champions League, Mauro Icardi will be at Inter next season. In regards to De Vrij, we had that wrapped up in March. So he has said this. I don't know whether it's tactical via Ozilio in order to spark some more flair or speculation leading up to the fixture, because Simeone Inzaghi is absolutely kidding himself if he thinks he has centre-backs at his disposal that can do a job like De Vrij does. He is head and shoulders their best defender. He is up there with the best defenders in Serie A this season, the best central defenders in my opinion. And, you know, had this situation not been going ahead, De Vrij would be probably the first one on the team sheet for Simeone Inzaghi. So if he does not take the field on Sunday, which is increasingly likely, it will be for the benefit of everybody, except for himself. I fancy that he finds himself in quite an awkward dressing room after the fixture, regardless of the result. Andrew, what do you think of the signing in general, and what do you think Stefan is going to bring to our defensive line next season, where it looks 99.9% likely he's going to partner up with Milan Skriniar in the central defence for us?
I think it's a good move. obviously, he's younger than Miranda, although I would be in favour of keeping Miranda, because then you have really three quality, serious quality centre-backs. I slightly reserving judgment on De Vrij until I see him playing for Inter, simply because the Lazio defence has been so weak this year. If you look at the goals conceded, the goals conceded are close to relegation form. That said, his performances have been very, very good, very, very solid. But I want to see him operating in a defence that actually works, which I think we can actually, certainly in the central part of it, we can say that our defence works now. It was the first thing that Spalletti looked to achieve, and he's achieved that. So I want to see him playing in a quality defence and just see does his individual performances contribute to a unit, That's the only place that I would reserve judgment on. Other than that, I'm very positive about it. I think it would be very, very unfair from Inzaghi to play him on Sunday. That said, in the newspaper yesterday, Inzaghi apparently said that he was considering playing him. But let's just argue, let's just take as an argument, it's nil-nil going into injury time at the end of the match. De Vrij and Icardi are chasing a ball which is heading towards the Lazio goal. De Vrij slips, you know, genuinely slips. Icardi goes through and scores. That would hang over De Vrij's head for the rest of his career. The accusation that he deliberately slipped, where it could be perfectly genuine, but that's not how football supporters would see it. And a club that he's had a good relationship with, fans that he's had the club a good relationship with, would suddenly hate him because they would see it as him putting his new side into the Champions League. That's why I just absolutely wouldn't play him. I think it would be completely unfair on the man.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I would not start him. I would not even put him as a as on the bench, to be honest. I just think there's way too much going on emotionally and, you know, transfer wise to even include him, which is a shame from a Lazio fan's point of view. You know, we are interested here and we want our team more than anything to win on the weekend and to make the Champions League. But if the shoe was on the other foot and I was a Lazio fan, I would actually be quite livid at this situation. I would be asking questions with my club and saying, how can you not keep this under wraps from the media and the fans until the rest of the season? Because of the because of this exposure, we now need to bench our best defender on the penultimate day of the season, which isn't good enough from a Lazio point of view, in my opinion. I'm not going to sit here and say that it gives us an advantage because we are Inter. There is no advantage in the world that we could be given. It is 100% up to us, and we need to go out there and do what we need to do for us. But yeah, once again, the decision to not play De Vrij is 100% down to the exposure that this transfer has been given. And I think that is inferior on all parties. And I think Ozilio, you know, he's a clever guy, a little bit deceptive. I think he had a little bit of a motive here.
Potentially, I'm no fan of Ozilio, but it does weaken Lazio's position. That said, it's a huge. It could be used as a huge galvanizing tactic by Inzaghi. Go into the dressing room, tell the rest of the players, look, we've been put in a position where we can't play Stefan. We can't realistically use him in this match. It's up to you to go out and do it for us, and up to you to get revenge for effectively what Ausilio has done to Lazio. So I think I don't as you said, I don't think it's an advantage. It potentially could be a disadvantage because it really puts Lazio's backs to the wall. Teams are dangerous when that happens. Can I see us making it? I'm not building myself up again because I built myself up last weekend and it all came crashing down. I'm going to say that I don't think we will. I can see it being a nil-nil draw, which isn't enough for us. And as I said, I refuse to build myself up to be disappointed again. What do you think, Anthony?
Pretty much what you just said. I know better than that, and most of the interesti I know online around the world know better than to get their hopes up on the last day like this. That's not to say we're not all going to wake up and, you know, scream in front of our TVs and scream Forza Inter and go Parza Inter in our homes across the world. We'll be there. We'll watch it at whatever time it is around the world, whether it's prime time for you guys or 4:45 in the morning for me here in Australia. I'll be up ready to go, but the expectations definitely are not elevated. I see this match going one of two ways. The first is nil-nil, as you said. The second is we are leading And when it comes down to the final 5 minutes plus injury time, we just completely buckle at the back and concede a goal. That would be the worst thing for me, but to me, that seems like the most likely outcome. And I'll just tell you why quickly once again. I've always known that this team fail, well, tends to weaken in the final stages of a match. Just probably because they have that anxiety of, wow, if we concede now, it's the worst possible time to concede a goal. And as I said before, the matches against Crotone, Spal, and Fiorentina, they will go down as the worst of the season for me. Forget the loss to Torino, forget the 3-1 at home to Udinese, forget the loss to Juventus, forget the nil-all to Milan, where Icardi had three no looks in front of the goal. Like those three results sum up Inter for me perfectly, and I'm really nervous that they are going to replicate something like that. I really hope they don't, and I hope that when we come to record this next time around, we are extremely jubilant. But I think people who are listening and people around the world can already tell that by the demeanor of the Inter fans, we're not looking ahead to next season as though this is over, but we have kind of looked at the fact that if this doesn't completely work out, we're just trying really hard to plan ahead. We're trying really hard to make sure that we don't fall down in the dumps and have to dig our way out. So, penultimately, at the end of next week, at the end of this week, sorry, I should say, let's just hope that we're the ones standing on top.
Just qu very quickly looking at the newspapers, like Gazzetta dello Sport, like with Swampians, Inter, like this, no, Politano strikes, Berardi closes, Rafinha shines, Icardi mistakes and Consigli saves. Spalletti, the lads are devastated. If Lazio wins at Crotone, bye-bye fourth place. Well, fortunately, that didn't happen. Best player, Rafinha, was six, which I think was slightly mean. Worst player, Icardi, four. Il Corriere dello Sport, Inter bang, incredible slipper against Sassuolo. Spalletti beaten 2-1, Champions League compromised. Best player, Ranocchia, six. Worst player, Icardi, four. Tutto Sport, psychodrama, Inter, Champions League panic. Sassuolo win at San Siro. Best player, Rafinha, 6.5. Icardi, worst player, four. La Gazzetta di Mantova, which is Sassuolo's local newspaper. Sassuolo doesn't shun and puts Inter in sorrow. Politano, Berardi, and Consigli lengthen the Nerazzurri from the Champions League. They didn't give any marks at all for Inter, which I think is just the style, journalistic style of their newspaper. But I think no marks at all for Inter after that match was probably the most accurate reflection. Metro Milano, Inter still hope. In other news, the Primavera side won 5-0 against Sassuolo at home, actually on the same day as the first team lost. A brace from Zaniolo and goals from Adorante, Colidio, and D'Amico secured the win, which gives Inter a place in the final four of the Primavera Championship. I don't know if everybody would know, but the Primavera Championship is basically played on, it has a playoff at the end to determine the champion. It's not as simple as who finishes top wins the league. Two teams come from the first group, and another two teams come from the second group, to contest semi-finals and final. In terms of history, 12th of May 1965, which, if I'm not wrong, was the same date as the match against Sassuolo, one of the greatest comebacks in Inter history. After losing 3-1 at Anfield in the European Cup semi-final first leg, few believed Inter could make it, particularly as at that time the away goal rule didn't exist. The atmosphere at the San Siro was electric, and the fans fundamental in creating the intimidating atmosphere which helped to push La Grande Inter onto a 3-0 win, thanks to goals from Corso, Pero, and Facchetti, and a place in the final, which was won 2 weeks later, 1-0 against Benfica at the San Siro, making Inter only one of only two teams to have won the European Cup stroke Champions League at home, the other being Real Madrid. In You mentioned to me before the show that you have some questions from the Australian Interisti community.
Yeah, had a couple of good ones. So Andrew says, hey, can you guys give a comment on Rafinha and Cancelo based on the recent performance? Does that confirm Rafinha as the better signing? Really good question and good little follow-up question from Andrew as well. And I agree with him 100%. Cancelo is a brilliant right back, in my opinion. I think he's great for our team, but let's look at this realistically. If we need to meet financial fair play regulations, we are not the kind of side that is going to redeem both, especially not without a sale from Icardi. So realistically, the fans are starting to look at, hold on, we're going to have to pick one of these guys. If we qualify for the Champions League, maybe we'll revisit the idea of redeeming both. But to answer Andrew's very good question and the one that's on many fans' lips, I think the performance on the weekend highlighted why we need Rafinha more than Cancelo. Rafinha brings this dynamism to our midfield that we have not seen in a long time. I'm reminiscent of Wesley Schneider picking up the ball and just directing traffic left, right, and center behind in front of him. You name it, Forza Wesley. And I think Rafinha really brings that different element of playing to our side, and he just elevates all the staticness that's around him. He demands more efficiency from those around him. And just seeing him grab the badge and seeing him score that goal, it just showed me, I'm like, you need to be here, man. You need to be here for us and for yourself. You're a brilliant player. You are going to go back to the Nou Camp, and you are not going to see that pitch next season. You are not going to see it anywhere near as much as a player of your caliber deserves to see a football pitch. So please come to us, 35 million Auxilio on Inter. Just get it done. I cannot stress this enough. I think this is the most important purchase of this club for a long time. So to answer your question, Andrew, Rafinha all the way. Before I get to the next one, Andrew, what do you think? Oh, same name. There you go. Andrew, what do you think? Rafinha or Cancelo?
No, I'd love to keep both, and in an ideal world, I would keep both. It's not an ideal world, and I would absolutely go with Rafinha, and the reason for that is to find a skillful, creative attacking midfielder who works and fits into your team is probably one of the most difficult positions to nail down. In a football team, Cancelo's a fantastic attacking right back. Reminds me very much of Maicon. I'd love to keep him, but fullbacks, certainly right-sided fullbacks, shouldn't be that difficult to find. Auxilio has a problem with finding decent right backs, decent left backs, as we know. But I really think that, you should be able to find a decent right back far quicker than you can find an attacking midfielder that fits into your team.
Yeah, I agree. Not only that, I think that the second question that I'm being asked is by Stephen. And the question that he asked actually will link to the first question and we can build on that. He said, it looks like the rumors are surfacing that Asamoah from Juventus is about to make his move permanent over to Inter. What do you guys think of that? That's a great question because that'll go right in with the fact that if we were to redeem Rafinha over Cancelo, we can always have that option. We can always have the fact of knowing that Asamoah is coming in to slot in on that left-hand side, which makes room for Danilo D'Ambrosio to go back to the right. I think Danilo D'Ambrosio, I think he is a good fullback. I do not think he is a world-class fullback. I do not think he is good enough for Inter in the long term, or even if it were up to me, Andrew, to be honest, I wouldn't be starting D'Ambrosio over the likes of Cancelo or Asamoah. But if we are in a position where we have to redeem one and Rafinha is redeemed and Asamoah arrives and he's slotted straight into left back, which I'm all for, I'm a big fan of Asamoah. I think he's a great player. I think he works very hard. There is no way in hell Allegri would be starting him majority of the season over a player like Alexandro, who keeps being linked with 60, 65 million euro moves to Chelsea and Manchester United over Asamoah. But he is, and he's been doing the job for them very, very well. I, for one, am very excited to see Asamoah come to our side next season. I think he's going to add an element of physicality in that left back role that D'Ambrosio has absolutely none of. Davide Santon could only dream of having 5% of it. And we just haven't had a strong left back in a while, in my opinion. So I'm excited for Asamoah to arrive. And if that means bringing Danilo D'Ambrosio back to start on the right, I'm okay with that. I would prefer João Cancelo, but in the scheme of things, the arrival of Asamoah bringing Danilo D'Ambrosio to the right, if that is how it's going to be, then I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay to line up with D'Ambrosio, Skriniar, De Vrij, and Asamoah next season as our starting back four, especially if it meant keeping Rafinha. So some good questions this week, Andrew.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think D'Ambrosio is a brilliant right back, and I don't think he's the kind of right back that you're going to have, that you need in your team if you're going to be competing for the Scudetto and other honours. That said, I don't think he's the liability that he's sometimes made out to be either. I also thought the same thing about Nagatomo. Nagatomo was frustrating at times, but just there's something lovable about the guy anyway. That you get past that. But I think D'Ambrosio and Nagatomo are both very much confidence players, and if their confidence is high, then they will put in good performances. Nagatomo, at the moment, he's on loan to Galatasaray. He's apparently absolutely flying there. He loves it out there. This weekend is the final weekend of the Turkish Super League season. Galatasaray sit 3 points ahead of Fenerbahce. Their goal differences are very, very, very similar. Galatasaray go away to Göztepe. If they were to secure even a draw there, they win the league, which would be Nagatomo's first league championship. Curiously, Fenerbahce are playing against Konyaspor, which could end up with Samuel Eto'o plays for Konyaspor. It could end up with one of Nagatomo's former teammates giving him a helping hand towards his first league title. Nagatomo, as I said, is apparently very, very, very happy in Turkey. But if that deal didn't go to pass in terms of him moving permanently to Galatasaray and he was to come back, you've got two, I would say, better than average fullbacks in Nagatomo and D'Ambrosio that you could probably get away with not finalising the deal for Cancelo, as much as I would love to see it happen. D'Ambrosio, obviously, as the first choice right back in that situation, and Nagatomo has a flexibility in him that he can play on either side. And he, you know, there's worse bench players than Nagatomo in terms of the fullback roles. So, yeah, I would definitely go with the Rafinha signing.
Yeah, I think Nagatomo was made an unfair scapegoat throughout the last few years when we really were performing poorly. But to be honest, I've always admired his passion and his dedication. And as you said, he's just a lovable player. He seems to really be a big motivator in the dressing room as well. I know when he was sent out at loan, a couple of our players were a little bit upset just about losing his presence. So you definitely won't hear any disgruntledness from me if Nagatomo does return to us next season, that's for sure.
And I think that brings us to a close on the show. As I said, I'm not building myself up for this match, but I'm sure that I'll wake up on Saturday morning, Sunday morning, with my heart pumping ahead of the game. All I can say at this moment is thank you, Anthony, and Forza Inter.
Thank you, Andrew. Forza Inter.
This is the segment where we look at Inter chance after the show is finished. Almost everyone who listens to this show will be aware of the two anthems which are used at every Inter home match. Pazza Inter Amala, Crazy Inter Loves It, and C'è solo l'Inter, there is only Inter. people who haven't had the opportunity to go to a game, or possibly because of the noise when we score, haven't realised, may not know that a third piece of music is regularly used, Orlando Controcello, Screaming Against the Sky, by Luciano Ligabue. The chorus of this song is used whenever we get a goal before the stadium announcer says who scored. This is in part a tribute to Ligabue, one of the most important cantatori, singer-songwriters in Italy, and a die-hard Interista. So here is the chorus, and until next week, Forza Inter.